If you enjoy the harrowing of Minerva Damson and want to join the Order of Joan in their fight against the monsters stalking the trenches, there are several ways you can support the war effort. Find us on Patreon and enlist, or donate to the Order on Acast. You can also connect with Order headquarters via Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Links can be found in our bio. The Harrowing of Minerva Damson is a horror podcast and contains descriptions of war that some may find graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good day, fair knights, and welcome to this season's wrap-up. As in wrap-ups before, this is a rather informal affair where the team behind the Harrowing of Minerva Damson get together and chat about this season, future plans, and all sorts of things in between. We'd be happy for you to join us, so go ahead, pull up a chair, and make yourself comfortable while I roll back the tapes and get us started.
Oh my god.
She's spider cat!
No. Can you guide
okay. So I really hope we keep this part in, because currently our cat has plastered herself to the window like one of those suction cup Garfields.
And she just keeps climbing up the screen.
That's a fun dance she was doing.
Okay, you know what we have to do to begin? Sing the Beast Club Ray song.
Oh Beast my god.
Beast Club Ray! Beast Club Ray! He's our wolf, and he's our bay!
Welcome to the season 2 wrap-up of the Harrowing of Minerva Damson podcast. I'm Jessica Linkhart. I am the writer, narrator, voice actress for Minnie Damson.
Director.
Editor.
Producer and editor.
Sound artist.
Sound
everything.
Mixer. Almost everything. And
this is Jamie Sykes, voice of Beast Clavray, and one quarter of the Manago.
One quarter.
That's right. Well, and also just, like, various assorted
bit voices.
Bit voices.
Yeah.
This is Mitch Lewis. I'm the graphic designer, also bit character, and also one fourth voice of the Manago.
And I'm Claire Miller. I was one of the voice actresses for this season. I was also one of the Matigo voices and the voice of Selma at the very end.
Yes. Selma. Mm-hmm. And so this little wrap-up is going to follow probably much the same format as previous wrap-ups. We're sitting around our little coffee table. We have a dog right next to us.
We have a couple of good brews.
Yeah,
some hot toddies.
Yes, and we're all settled in. So,
booze and brews.
Booze and brews. All right, so yeah, season 2 introduced a couple of really critical new characters.
Mm-hmm.
Characters that we're very excited about.
Yes, that we're very excited about, and that presented their own like unique challenges. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think when we went into season 2, we knew that The first thing we knew was that the Matigo was going to be sort of the...
Matigo had to be something super special and super cool.
And we had to figure out a way to convey what Jessica envisioned and what what you wanted for the character.
Yeah, so what I originally kind of wanted for this character and what made me think of this character was a couple of things, really. I'm a huge fan of the Old Kingdom trilogy by Garth Nix, and in that series, there's this, like, magical and incredibly sarcastic cat.
Mogget.
Mogget. Mogget has always had a very special place in my heart, and so it's no wonder that an iteration of that would appear in my work.
Well, and he the Matigo may also be serving a little bit of Thackeray Binks from Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose, but I, you know what? I actually didn't grow up with Hocus Pocus.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, there's a long tradition of asshole talking cats.
Yes, there is.
Speaking of asshole talking cat, There's one in the window right now.
Oh, wanting to be let in.
And the other thing, the idea for the Matagos voice, what I originally sort of envisioned was, I don't know, has everybody here seen The Prince of Egypt?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, Classic. There's like the burning bush scene, right?
Mm.
And the voice of God is sort of this interesting mixture of like male and female voices.
All those layered voices.
Yeah.
Fun fact about that. The voice actor that did the voice for
Moses
is actually the same. Yeah. He's actually the same voice that did God's voice. So it's an interesting kind of like introspection of this is the, this is your voice that you recognize and that you hold in authority.
Well, and that's actually something that I had thought about with the Matago and the way the Matago sort of interacts with Minnie and everyone else.
Is a reflection of their own voices? I didn't even
in a way,
think
I mean,
of that.
The main voice, I mean, in a practical sense, it's that we have four voice actors between us, so we have to make do. But you could also interpret that as the Matago using
their voices
to communicate with them, but also kind of like influence them. And
that puts a whole new spin on the tale that I didn't even think of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Matago.
Spooky cat.
The Matago is a really, really interesting entity. And as I hope everybody else thought so too, that is not outright hostile to humans, but is not above manipulating them.
As we have seen this season.
Yes. So when I was doing research for the whole podcast, I ran across the Matago, like the mythical creature that I don't think a lot of people really know that much about, from the south of France. And it's this little black cat that is usually considered evil, but can also bring you luck under the right conditions. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, I have to have it. But the Matago was going to be our technical challenge to sort of realize that sort of interesting, shifting
layer.
Definitely inhuman, but still kind of like appealing to humanness vibe.
Yeah.
So, and we also had a lot of fun because for some lines, basically how we ended up achieving the effect of the Matago's voice is I read all the lines how, like, in the tone for the Matago that I was thinking of. And then Claire would come in. She was the first one to come in and, like, sit down, and she'd listen to what I said and then, like, repeat it with usually the same intonation, but sometimes
slightly different.
Yeah, because sometimes we wanted to have the Matago sort of have several different sort of tones.
Multifaceted.
Reactions to something.
And then the boys would try to come in, too, and add to that, and it was just...
So. Trying to record mine, like, I was one of the last ones. Most of the monologues was, like, bits of, like, maybe 5 syllables that I had to, like, re-listen to 50 times.
I tend to speak, actually, pretty quickly most of the time. And the Matago tends to have sort of an interesting way of speaking anyway, and some sort of, like, weird sentence structures that, you know, when you hear it, you don't really notice it. But if you were trying to repeat it in, like, at exactly the same pace with very similar intonation, it starts becoming a bit of a challenge.
A tongue twister, even.
Yes.
Voice acting in itself is a challenge if you've never done it before. But then trying to match someone else's, like, cadence and inflection and tones was a whole new set of challenges for this season.
Yeah, and getting them to all line up, because then later, once everybody was done, I had to go and, if there was any discrepancies, sort of trim and push and get them to all line up. Put them together and then put them in the episode.
It's amazing how good the ear is at discerning, like, when sounds don't line up exactly.
It is, and that's why it was such... Honestly, season 2 had some really finicky work.
I really, like, okay, so my technique for, like, doing the Madigo thing was I was always, like, picking up on your beats for your cadence, and I was, like, using my arm motion
yes,
as,
like... talking with your arms.
I talked with my arms and, like, you know, just beat the beat, the beat, and, like, yes. just tried to fix it.
Otherwise known as the Italian method.
Yeah.
Because there is a certain kind of cadence or rhythm to the way that the Madigo speaks, for sure. But also, I'm just, like... I'm really proud of you, Mitch, and I'm, like, glad that you, I don't, like, because you, like, sat down and really just worked and worked and worked at it, and I know it wasn't always easy or fun just sitting there in the booth with me, just having to say, like, this line over and over and over again, but you did it.
Thank you.
And I just, admire that, and you didn't get irritated or... frustrated or anything. I just kept doing it.
I mean, the phrase, you're killing me, Smalls, happened at least twice.
Yes.
Because,
very,
like
good-natured.
Some of the last ones, like in, what was it, episode 5 or whatever, where it was, like, just a string monologue.
Oh, yeah.
And I just swivel my chair while it's playing and just stare
down. I'm so sorry. Well, that and episode 3. Episode 3 was really Episode 3 is where the Madigo chews the scenery.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just monologuing and being this magical entity that only looks like a cat.
See, I thought one of the interesting process things for me for the Madigo was, so Jess and Claire laid down their tracks for it first, and they're kind of in a similar vocal range, so they would sort of, like, mesh together really well. And it already sounded, like, pretty, you know, surreal.
Yeah.
And then we layered in mine, and I'm so much lower than the two of them that it did not sound right at all.
Oh, I do remember that. With only the 3 voices at first, we were like...
It didn't work with 3. It had to be 4 voices.
We should just keep it 2 voices, because...
Yeah, there was that debate earlier.
Jamie's was so far removed from ours, we were like, this wasn't the effect we wanted.
Yeah, it ended up sort of, like, pulling your ear sort of in 2 different directions.
Yeah.
Like, you were trying to focus on one, like, our voices.
It sounded like 2 characters talking.
Yep. Yeah.
And then Mitch came in with sort of like an intermediate tone, and that's what kind of married everything back together.
Yeah, that pulled it all together.
What's even cooler was, like, I was able, whenever we were, like, recording and stuff like that, just listening to the other two's vocals, I could actually, like, either pitch myself up or down based on what the actual, like,
fill-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, what it needed. Yeah, so it was work, for sure, but honestly, I feel like we all had a lot of fun with the Madigo, especially in its more sarcastic or
snarky
just, like,
moments.
Disdainful.
Oh, yeah.
Disdainful.
I mean, yeah, it was frustrating at times, but, like, you got to be just so hammy.
I liked voicing the Madigo because... My character in this season didn't really come in towards the very end, so with the Madigo, I still got to be involved.
Yes, And then, so we have Selma, who got introduced this season, which I don't know how much we can really say about Selma,
because... Yeah, I don't
want to... More to be seen later.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I am excited about the introduction of Selma into this dynamic.
Me too.
So we can't say that much about Selma.
Other than the fact that I'm nervous to voice her again, because... When we did her voice recording session, I was sick. So my voice was much lower than it normally is, and it was easier to do that. And now that I've been sick, like, the past month, so trying to record with Jessica has been a bit of a challenge.
I mean, maybe Selma was sick that day.
But also going to be, like, a lower...
Yeah, trying to revisit the character and hit that same low register, I'll have to work at it.
Yeah, we'll be working at that. And we've got time, you know, between now and season 3. We've got a whole other, you know, inter-season arc between here and there to do. And then, of course, there's Beast Claw Ray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beast Claw Ray. Beast Claw Ray.
Okay, you have to tell about the story behind the song.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, Beast Claw Ray wasn't always, like, a big part of season 2. He was originally sort of, like, just sort of a smaller part, I think. But a few years ago, we went to a lecture about the medieval concept of lycanthropy. and before the Beast of Gévaudan, because the Beast of Gévaudan is really like more like 18th century. That's where our modern concept.
Well, and it's where we ascribe more of, like, the monstrous and dangerous parts of it.
Yeah, that's how we think about werewolves now, because of what happened in the 18th century, which is really fascinating. If you haven't ever looked it up, look it up. It's a really interesting story because parts of it did happen, but this story, like this lecture, was about the sort of earlier concept of werewolves in medieval Europe. So the Lays of Marie de France, which is what Bisclave Rey mentions to Minnie in episode 4, that is a real thing. there are 12 tales, and one of those 12 tales is about the tale of Bisclave Rey. And in the lay, it calls him a garwolf. But anyway, the whole point being that it's a really, really interesting story. It does differ from sort of the modern werewolf stuff, but you can definitely see where our modern concept sort of jumped off from. And learning about that earlier concept of werewolves and garwolves, I don't know, I couldn't resist when I was writing this.
Folding
I couldn't
in,
resist
yeah.
bringing that in.
Which I'm not complaining about.
Yes.
I'm a fan of werewolves in media, so I was happy when Jessica told me about this character.
Yes, and it's really cool kind of getting to, like, dig through a bunch of different, like, myths and stuff. But the tale of Bisclave Rey is really cool. When I ran across it, once I learned about it, and once I started writing this, I couldn't resist folding it in. The whole thing about not being able to transform back into a human without
Clothes, specifically your
clothes, that is a big part of the Lay of Bisclave Rey. So anyway, that first informed his character. That's where, like, the idea to put in this sort of werewolf came in. But the rest was just
natural part of the writing process.
Yes, a natural part of the writing process.
And the song came about because...
And the song came about because... For English speakers, I think, or modern English speakers, there's something kind of difficult about pronouncing Bisclave Rey.
Well, it's that S-C-L-A section.
Yes.
Like, scla.
Yeah.
That's not something we really say.
Yeah. When I first started getting ready to record, I had to keep repeating Bisclave Rey to myself. I'd be like, Bisclave Rey, Bisclave Rey, Bisclave Rey, Bisclave Rey. And then it just started... naturally taking on the
Be Our Guest.
Yeah, the melody of Be Our Guest, Be Our Guest.
With the French accent.
Yes. Yeah.
It just kind of fits together.
It's easier to say if you say it with a French accent.
Or if you sing it. And that was really sort of the key. Is some reason, like, singing it helped, like, train my tongue and later Jamie and Mitch's tongue how to put those consonants together and make it flow.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe this is a good time to segue into favorite characters, which there aren't that many this season, so it won't
be
hard.
It's a small cast.
And just favorite parts of production and or like the podcast itself.
Well, I guess I'll go because I already mentioned that I'm a fan of werewolves, so Bisclave Rey was my favorite character of the season. I think the part I liked best was probably when he's, like, chasing Minnie through the tunnels and stuff,
yes.
And it gets really intense. I like that part. And the part afterwards when they're in the woods.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. When he, like,
I liked seeing him wolf out.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, I just think on just a normal level, we can all agree that Bisclave Rey is a dilf. I guess season has to have one.
During the drafting of this script and sort of character preparation, we did start referring to him as the were-dilf.
Yeah.
Which I had to keep that in mind as I was sort of like trying to arrive at like how should I sound for this character?
Yes, yeah.
Which is why
would you want your were-dilf to sound?
Yeah, which is why I tried to drive it sort of that like soft, thoughtful, but a little bit husky.
Yeah, I think you did great. I really enjoyed it.
I think you nailed it, Jamie.
Yeah.
Well,
I would like sweet nothings in the voice of Bisclave Rey, that like nice husky growl.
Well, you two are married, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So,
just turn over, hey, just talk like Bisclave Rey.
Talk to me like Bisclave Rey.
I do appreciate the vote of confidence, Claire. I already respected your work in the inner season, being like a main character. But I respect it even more having been a main character now, because holy shit, it's a lot of work. I've been bit parts since the jump here, but there's just so much more pressure on getting a main character right.
Well, you were a main character for the whole season, so that you did good, Jamie.
Yep. Well, in fairness, like there's like two episodes where I was not speaking. Yeah, so.
I would just call you and say, okay, Jamie, pant into the microphone.
Pant, growl, yelp.
Yes. Yeah. This is the part where you really get to get into it.
Wasn't the last one like just, hey, I need you to chuckle? Okay, yes, just an entire evening of hey,
chasing me
you.
Around the house. Yeah. For a
I
chuckle,
need you to yeah. come over here and chuckle, and it needs to sound good and genuine.
Now
it can't sound strained at all.
That said, my favorite character, like I really like Beast Clubber, eh? Since you know I had to sort of develop him in my head, but. I gotta say the Matigo beats him in my estimation, yeah. Just because I cannot get away from my love for sassy magical little shits.
Yes, and that is what the Matigo is.
All of my favorite D&D characters have been sassy magical little shits. Like, it's my whole thing.
Yeah, it's your whole vibe.
Yes.
Cryptid fans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I will give you guys one guess as to what my favorite character is. I am currently wearing a shirt that says, "We're all cats here." I just really enjoyed just turning on the ham and being as sassy as humanly possible. And, like, also kind of hissing and growling a little bit in my speech.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know. It called to me, so to speak.
What is that one song where it's like, "It's fun to be a cat"?
It's Aristocrat. Yeah. Or Aristocats.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, hopefully it's not from
Cats 2019.
No, God. Let's not revisit that.
No, never again.
We will not be spending this New Year's watching that New Year's Eve.
No. No amount of alcohol could make that okay.
No. But also, circling back around to Jamie, that was your favorite character. Favorite part of the podcast?
Gosh. That is hard for me to pin down because there was a lot of really interesting things.
There was a lot of good moments this season where the action was just like, there was a lot going on. It was fun to listen to, fun to read.
Yeah, honestly, like episode 3, things got really visceral when things started coming together.
Yeah.
Like all the squishy sounds of soldiers getting mushed by gargoyles and stuff. Okay. Although, okay, I think I know what my favorite part was, and selfishly, it's something I contributed.
Yes.
It was the spells in episode 3.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I really enjoyed writing those.
Yeah, so I first wrote the spells, but dear fans, dear listeners, do know, I'm okay at prose, but I am not a poetry person. I'm not good at that. But Jamie happens to be very good at that, so eventually I just turned to him and said, "Hey, babe, can you please write these for me? Please make them better. Please make them make sense and sound pretty."
Well, the originals were good, but I think, like, I read through the script and I gave you a few points at some areas, and I was like, this just needs something a bit more.
Yeah.
And that was when...
Like a melodic quality.
Yeah, when you recruited Jamie.
Yes, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, I think that came together really well.
Well, and as a production note, like, me and Mitch dropped out of the Matigo for those sections, I think because Jess was conceiving of this as it's echoes of the original witches who were doing this.
At the time, the coven was like, female, mostly.
Sort of echoing through time.
Yes.
The witches.
Yes, the witches.
So, my favorite part, going back... Everybody wants to be a cat, and whenever the Matigo
envelops Minnie,
that was pretty great. Also, be silent.
Yeah,
oh,
that
God.
Was really when I put that together, because at first it was just like the regular Matigo voice, and I was like, no, it needs something else. And when I added that extra, like,
effect.
You know, really deep voice, it like
it's so good.
Yeah.
Well. What was your favorite part?
I don't know. Like, for me, it's kind of hard to say, to pick, like, favorite characters.
Sure.
And it's not even that, like, I love all my children equally. It's that I just really liked everybody this season. I mean, and Minnie's the main character and kind of gets overlooked in some ways because she's sort of...
A vehicle for the story.
Yeah. But she is starting to kind of undergo... some changes. We didn't really get to see it in season one because it all happens like really fast, right? And she's not even really at this point where she can process everything, even towards the end. But starting in season two, it's sort of the beginning of a new part of her like character development arc. And I mean, you can already see that I feel like in season one, she was already tired, a little bit run down from everything. But now, for instance, when she's walking away from Marie Babineau's cottage and she's seeing this like really beautiful sort of a vista before her, this really lovely green springtime medieval village enchanted sort of vibe, she starts to enjoy it and then she just kind of dismisses it because she's like, this isn't important right now or anymore.
Or this isn't my reality anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I wish I could capture this and send it to my brother. But, like, that's, like, so far in the future for her and so removed from where she is right now that it just sort of everything, like, hearing the sounds of war and everything she's been through has already started to leech some things away.
Like the color from her hair.
That's one thing that I really appreciate in your writing and just your narration is you're always conscious about every single change that has happened to her. Like, you know, whenever you're trying to describe, oh yeah, she's still deaf in this ear. Yeah. Like, it's still a very abundant part of that story.
It is going to have an effect on how she experiences the world and how she handles challenges.
Well, yeah, it's like a permanent disability.
Yeah.
That's something I appreciate, too, about the writing, because in a lot of, like, you know, stories, things that happen to characters aren't, like, the reactions are often forgotten or aren't realistic of what
it's like, oh,
happens
and then they
in
were
real
fine.
Life. Yeah. It's like they went through this horrible traumatic experience, but they're fine. They're fine now.
Yeah.
No lasting effects.
I had one good cry and now I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Minnie is still permanently deaf in that ear. I will, spoiler alerts, tell you right now, that doesn't get fixed.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah. Like, this is not a story where someone gets a disability and then magically it's all better in the end, and she's whole. Minnie is already whole as she is. Let's just get that off the table. Like, disability does not make you
incomplete.
Yeah. She does miss that sense for sure, but it's not something that's going to get just hand waved away later. Mm-hmm. She still is recovering from hurting her ankle. That's still a problem.
Now she's going to be recovering from blood loss.
Yeah,
which is more of a short-term thing.
But. Yeah, it's a short-term thing, but she's also, like, by the end of season two, she is exhausted. She's, like, covered in scratches and bruises. She's been, like, walking for hours and hours and hours in, like, really tough conditions. Yeah, she is taking damage, and it is, like, remaining with her, so...
She has not taken a long rest in D&D terms.
Yes, no.
She
Man, it would take a lot longer than just a long rest to get rid of some of those stuff.
But she's still trucking along, but it's still affecting her. And it is not reasonable to expect people to be able to just do this. But she is going ahead and doing it. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, as an action hero, I think she's... If you would consider her an action hero, I don't know at this point. She is...
By some measures, for sure.
Yeah, she can't shake it off indefinitely. Like, you know, just shrug it off.
It might catch up to her.
Yeah, it might catch up to her. So, although that being said, too, this is a story, and the needs of the story also have to be considered. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Require the protagonist to still be able to keep going.
Yes, I am the author, and I am God, and...
I
try to make things as, I guess, sort of logically consistent as I can, but also, this is a story, and there is magic,
and we are within the confines of a podcast.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm really excited, I guess, to explore where Minnie is going, because, yeah, this is the beginning of sort of a trajectory for her, and the Madrigo is not necessarily helping how she feels about things, because the Madrigo
presents a harsh view of the world.
Yes, a very, very dark and transactional view of the world.
Adopt this cat. Yes, you can have my blood. Yes, you can have everything. Just please be with me.
Mitch, the Matico would...
sells
would
his soul to the devil for some cuddles.
but also, like, I get it.
Okay, so that's favorite parts, favorite characters.
Oh, I didn't say favorite part for me yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I was going to make a joke about how we were saying earlier, your favorite character was German villager number 3.
Yes. Well, the one singing drunkenly in the background in episode 1. That's my favorite. But favorite parts. Like, I feel like this podcast, like, this season kind of did a whole bunch of different things. So it's actually kind of hard because I really liked them all. I really liked the gargoyle scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was extremely finicky, and also I almost had a total breakdown because when I was working on that episode, I was like 5 minutes from the end. I had done all the like soundscaping except for the last 5 minutes, and then my Audacity just like threw a fit and lost all of it. So I had to start from scratch. So that was not fun.
Audacity is a sound...
Yeah, a sound.
What you do your sound editing on.
Yes, sound editing program.
The Audacity. Yeah.
So I almost.
She had a full on crisis, yeah.
But.
I hope you learn to do backups now.
I did. I was pretty obsessive, so in the last few episodes. But that was a really finicky sequence. But when like it came together, I feel it came together.
Yeah,
so I really enjoyed that. But. In a way, and maybe this is just because it's fresh in my mind, because I just did this scene, but possibly my favorite scene is the very end of of season 2 when Minnie and Selma meet.
So why is that your favorite scene?
Well, that's to be determined, Mitchell.
suffice to say, we'll be seeing more of Selma
in
future seasons.
Yes.
Seeing more.
Those violins are very, very peculiar.
I was putting something down, and I'm hoping that everybody out there picks it up. I don't think I was being particularly subtle, and if you're blindsided by things that happen later, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I hinted pretty strongly at where... This might be going.
Who knows?
May or may not be.
I mean, you might just torture us all and just like have Selma killed real quick or something. Just like start of episode season
that's,
3.
That's where it's going.
Yep. Yeah.
Season 3, episode 1. A shot rang out.
And then Minnie was alone with the Matigo once again, which is rapidly becoming her greatest nightmare.
Or it was the Matigo that pulled out the gun. Oh my god.
Yeah,
no, that would be if I was writing the season.
Help from the shadows.
My mom was like, I called her and I was like, oh, mom, how did you like the end of the season? And she was like, oh, baby, I loved it. And she's like, but what happened to Beast Claw Ray? Last time we saw him, he was like running off into the underbrush.
That's actually my biggest question, too.
What happened indeed?
I guess you're just going to have to tune in for season 3.
Yeah, I guess you're just going to have to find out. And then
what happened to the weirdo?
Yeah.
That is my top priority.
I demand answers. J. Jonah Jameson voice. I demand pictures of weirdo.
I mean, internet, you know what you must do.
We haven't gotten any fan art yet.
We haven't gotten any fan art, and I'm really excited for whenever we do, because I feel like We'll have made it.
We'll do shout-outs, guys.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. We will reblog and share and retweet, except Twitter's, like, in the toilet, which
so
honestly
maybe not
good
retweet,
riddance.
But, yeah.
but if you send it to us, we'll find a way to get it out there.
Yes.
And I would just be so pleased, because I feel like there are milestones to, like, if you've made it. And of course there's, like, you know, however many number of downloads you've had or whatever, how recognizable your podcast is in certain spheres. But I think there's two very important thresholds that tell a property that they've made it. And one is having fan art done of something that you've made. And the other is having fan fiction written.
I was going to say, what about the erotic sphere?
I wasn't even thinking about like erotic fan fiction, although often that is what it is. But just like fan fiction in general, if somebody like takes my like little world and is like, I want to write a little tiny story inside of it. I'm just gonna be like, but like, I don't think I can read it for legal reasons. But if I saw that it existed, I would be like, this warms my heart.
And then I would read it and no, tell you if it was
I
good.
I don't think that you can either. We will just like sit and stare at the title and be like, aw, and then give you kudos and stuff. So
and maybe we'll look at the tags and decide how alarmed we need to be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, alarmed, intrigued.
Por qué no los dos? Least favorite part?
Okay, least favorite.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that yours was losing an episode.
Well, yes, yeah. But I don't think that really counts because that's just technical difficulties.
Okay, sure.
I think that counts. That's part of the process.
And that, okay, least favorite part
one.
Having to redo
it. Yeah.
Yeah, least. Okay, that was very not a fun experience. I don't know. I mean, there were just some really finicky sound editing parts, and it's weird because I hated it at the time when I was trying to do it, but then later I was like, wow, this is great, because like the product came out I think pretty well. I think my least favorite part, and this is a problem that I've noticed in season 1-2, and this is why at some point I need to get like a line editor or something, I keep freaking noticing, because I'm listening to these episodes like a billion times, I notice that there's like a word that I used frequently in an episode or a phrase that I lean on. And so that started doing, after a while, that starts to do psychic damage to me as a writer. I'm just like, I can't, oh God, I've noticed it and now I can't unsee it. Yeah, so if I was to say that there was something that was not fun, it was probably realizing that as I'm going through these episodes.
I don't know if I had a least favorite part. I liked, yeah. I mean, I like working with you guys. I like coming here and doing the voice recording. Maybe I'd have to say trying to record while I was sick.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't like the way my voice was sounding.
Yeah.
And that was kind of difficult.
Well, and yeah, that was, whenever you came in, I was like, it's okay if we don't do this today. And we did have, like, the demo where, like, a few weeks earlier we had...
Yeah, just like run through lines for fun. We hadn't even really been that serious about it.
Yeah, and I was like, we could use this if we needed to. But Claire toughed it out anyway, and I did really like the delivery of Selma's lines.
So okay, I'm glad you did.
Yes. Least favorite part, when Beast Clavre wasn't on screen.
Yeah.
When Beast Clavre ran off into the underbrush and his fate remained unknown.
When he was injured.
but see, is that your least favorite part, or is that a good, like, angsty, he was injured?
Well, I feel like it takes away from the romantic suspense a little bit, because, like, as Minnie's tending to his wounds, he's like, I'm married. And you're like, okay.
Oh, that's the...
So morally, I can't ship these two.
I mean, you can do anything you want, but...
Yeah, you can.
This is very relevant. In fact, in the actual canon of the story, there is nothing between Minnie and Beast Clavre. Now, in fanon...
Yeah,
anything you want.
In the realm
true.
Of the internet, we know that people will.
And I respect that. That's okay. Go ahead and play to your heart's content. But in the canon, Minnie and Beast, there's nothing going on between Minnie and Beast Clavre in a romantic sense.
They're respected colleagues.
They respect each other, and there is an almost somewhat paternal. Beast Clavre respects Minnie as she is an authority. She is capable of handling herself. But she is also younger, and he is older, and there is...
I didn't think
to
he
a
was
certain
so
extent,
old, though.
He isn't, like, terribly old, but he is older. She's not young enough to be one of his children, for sure, but she's not, like,
not
she's
young
just
enough
sort of, like,
to call
old.
Him daddy.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, when the chips were down, he was like, go to Minnie, and then he was like, I'll just go kill all these guys. So he does, like, there is sort of, like, a
while
protective...
While dramatically taking off my pants.
Yeah, while
ripping the shirt.
Literally ripping off my shirt and getting ready to rip off my pants. Like, so anyway.
I did not act that part out.
No.
Method acting.
Method voice
method
acting.
Method acting in the Goblin Booth.
Which the Goblin Booth is down
the
for
Goblin
the first
booth
time in like 4 months.
Down. Yes, there's sunlight coming back into our kitchen.
We have different plans for sound. We have different plans for sound baffling in the future that may make the Goblin Booth a thing of the past.
Oh, that'd be nice.
But we'll have to hold like a retirement ceremony or
special
something.
Retirement bonfire.
Yeah. Hey, that's
a
good.
Bonfire.
Wood's expensive.
Yeah, it is.
Expensive to burn.
There's a lot of like that really thin wood that you could use for miniatures or whatever.
Yeah, that's good. That's good quality plywood.
Okay.
We're not burning
shit. That's
fair. All right, Jamie. Least favorite parts of production and or anything that happens in the story.
Well, I genuinely really enjoyed the story. My production gripe was mostly my own issues, because I felt the pressure of being a primary character. So, like, honestly, it was a little stressful. Just, like, making sure that I was doing my homework and doing my prep and stuff. Because, like, I know for the interseason, Claire did a lot of work, like, practicing on her own time. To, like,
well, I understand what Jamie's saying, because you want to do justice to the character.
Yeah.
And you're like, you feel that you're an amateur, but you're like, I want to get better.
Yeah, and I was definitely feeling that too. So, like, I made sure to put in my time in the background. But getting in the booth, even just driving at those takes, could get a little bit frustrating, mostly for the Matigo, actually, because, like, timing, y'all.
Yeah.
Timing.
Yeah.
It has to be a perfect match, and the Matigo does not.
Or very near.
And the Matigo does not speak like a modern human being speaks. So, yeah, it was a little stressful, but well worth it in the end.
The product came out well.
I would do it again, but I wouldn't enjoy doing it again.
I
enjoy the product.
I think one production weirdness was, like, the fact that these microphones don't really pick up my voice too well sometimes, and you've had to, like, bump me a lot.
There's sort of a weird... I don't know if it's just you, because I've had it happen to Jamie from time to time, or me.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly I'll be, like, recording in Audacity, and the, like, waveform gets really, really small, and it just doesn't pick up voices that well. And I have looked up and down to see what the hell is going on, if, like, what's affecting the volume levels, and I haven't found what it is yet, so we just have to work with it.
Yeah, it's a mild annoyance. Like, most of my gripes are, like, super duper mild annoyances, so I don't... This is going to sound really weird, since this entire season is pretty much in a cave. I don't really like cave dwellings stories, is the thing.
Is it because it's a fear or something?
I think it might honestly be,
because
I don't even like it, like, in video game format or, like, you
it
know, movie format. It's very claustrophobic. You have a very limited supply of what you have at any point in time, and you can't see the sun.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I feel like, but that's kind of what makes the story effective, though.
Yeah.
Because it's feeling
it's
all
uncomfortable.
That. And actually, you know what, if I was going to say, sorry, let me go back to my favorite part. I actually do think that my favorite part, the part that I'm most proud of, is episode 5, when everything starts finally going down and the passer shows up and Minnie runs off. And, like, my favorite part is when she, like, slips down the tube and gets stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
That's the part that made me squirm.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, like, I'm like, so we're in this fantasy land where there's these, like, creatures and stuff. And that has thus far mostly been the type of horror that we've been examining in The Harrowing of Minerva Damson. It's ghouls, it's vampires, it's...
gargoyles.
You know, gargoyles, or the beast, or the Matigo to a certain extent, or whatever.
Passer,
or the passer. But this scenario was one that could really happen. And
has happened.
And has happened.
And honestly, the scariest part about this isn't the creatures. It's her imagination.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think that part is the part that I'm the most... proud of, and that I really liked the best.
Mm-hmm. And it's synonymous with your least favorite part,
yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah. All right, so what are we looking forward to with season 3, or just, like, in general in the future of, you know, The Harrowing of Minerva Damson?
More Matigo.
That will always be Mitch's answer.
I mean,
the answer is cat.
No spoilers, there will be more Matigo.
Yes. More cowbell.
Yeah.
More cowbell.
You're saying that the thing in the logo is actually, you know, prevalent throughout the entire story?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm interested in seeing more of Selma.
Yes.
And
yes.
in voicing her.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about Selma, too.
The fate of Beast Club Ray remains to be determined, but what I'm looking forward to is honestly just seeing where the story goes. Like, every season has been themed on a different kind of horror so far.
Mm-hmm.
Season one was, like, the horror of trench warfare slash
zombies,
the undead. Which, honestly, it could be considered, like, an expression of the horrors of the trenches and stuff like that. And, like, the
interseason actually works really, really well.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's why I liked season one so much, is because like
this is going to be one of those works where like Jessica just wrote the story, but then the fans go back and find all this deep symbolism.
Well, yeah, the thematics just kind of like leak out on
their. Make me so happy.
Yeah, the themes kind of leak out on their own after a while.
Yeah,
but and then the interseason, it was just sort of this like almost familial horror that was going on, which oh god, I loved that. And then this has been, like, earth, stone, claustrophobia, what have you.
Yeah.
So, like, what new depths of fear will we explore next?
Yeah. Yeah. Something in the water.
I mean,
Jaws.
You joke, but...
Oh, no. No.
Oh, is water something that sets you off?
I mean, I don't like to be the first to jump into deep water. I will let someone else do that.
I understand that fear.
Well, your turn.
I think I am also looking forward to kind of exploring perhaps, hopefully, a new facet of horror. I'm always getting, like, worried that I'm going to just end up being one note. So I'm always...
I think you need to worry about that.
No.
Mix it up. But I have an idea of where we're going next. But I always surprise myself when I'm writing what ends up coming out.
Well, the story has a will of its own.
It does. It really does. I mean, I guess the same as everybody, like Selma, thematic. I don't know. I'm just excited. I'm excited for what comes next.
Well, you're the author. You should be.
Yeah, I'm glad that I am.
Do you have any idea when the third season will come out? Because I know we're about to enter the holiday season. It'll be pretty busy for everyone.
I really don't want to jinx myself because the moment I say a date, it's going to be the opposite of setting it in stone. It's going to just...
fling it out the door.
Yeah, it's going to be like, no, that's not happening then.
But maybe we can start with, like, okay, we want to have the interseason in the works by...
I would like to have the next interseason arc out by March. I would like that. And, you know, then maybe 3 months later, season three. Ideally, back when... maybe I had an unrealistic idea of how quickly I can work.
How quickly you can coordinate four other people to work with you.
Yes, and we had Miranda passed away, and that threw all of us off for quite a while. So I don't actually have a really good idea of how quickly or slowly I work. Ideally, in the beginning, I wanted to have two seasons in a year. And then an interseason arc between those seasons. That might be a bit ambitious, because it is actually a lot of work for a tiny little team like us, and I'm doing, like...
most of it.
90%.
You're doing the lion's share.
Yeah,
70 to 90%, I don't really know, but I'm doing the majority of the work. So, you know, it really just depends on my own... pace.
It
depends on how much energy I have and focus, and
because this isn't the only thing you're doing.
It isn't the only thing I'm doing, so yeah, but ideally it would be a season, an off season, and a season, like maybe like three releases of The Harrowing a year.
Three products
that are associated with it, I guess. And I'm also doing the Delilah Docs right now, so.
Which is a Patreon exclusive.
It is a Patreon exclusive.
So lessons learned.
So remember how we talked about time management? And I preempted at the end of the Chevalier like wrap up. I said, I don't know if this is going to work for season two, but because I'm going to Ireland for like 3 weeks in the middle of production of season two. So, you know, I was hoping to get ahead, but expecting at some point that would catch up to me. Well, that's exactly what happened. So the totally avoidable and yet...
not unexpected.
Yeah.
Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Yeah, like the totally expected and unavoidable thing happened. So by the end of the season, I had the first two in the can when I went to Ireland. Episode 3 was like the monster episode, and also like a bunch of my progress got eaten, so that set me back. And then so from like episode 3 onward, it was like 3, 4, 5. Three, four, five, and six. I was
making
them the week before. So we don't want to do that again. Good news is everybody had a lot more time this season to learn their lines. Typically.
Another good lesson learned is that next season we'll be doing table readings ahead of production.
Yes.
Good idea.
We'll actually have time to do that because, with the whole trip that I had, it just kind of blew everything into complete.
This whole year has been a mess.
This has been a, it's been a.
has time even passed since 2020?
What is time? This season I practiced my lines for Beast Club Ray, just like going back into my office and reading the script out loud, which was fine for like some initial stuff, but there's something different that pops out when you're playing off of each other as characters.
And that's what we ended up doing. Also, a table read aloud is a good idea because sometimes when you're practicing by yourself, you'll get like a pronunciation in your head that is the wrong pronunciation. Mm-hmm. But because you've practiced it for a while, that's the one that you keep saying. Then when you find out, oh, that's not how that French word is said, or even some English words that you've just always said in your head.
Yeah,
like some hashtag relatable millennial content when everybody thought it was Hermione instead of Hermione.
So I think that reads will help
that.
That
got me too. So table reads.
Honestly, I kind of enjoy just walking in and being like, okay, you need to focus on this, and I don't know if table reads are going to actually help me or not.
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, it'll be like a D&D session. You just become a different character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And then you can start getting the intonation down right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
like, honestly, it's so much of what I have brought to the table, such that it is from my time as a dungeon master.
Yes.
Like, that is where I practice doing voice
D&D
stuff.
D&D is a gateway to podcasting.
Honestly, like, let's start the 4,000th D&D podcast, guys. That's kind of where I'm bringing my experience from. So, like, table reads are kind of like a natural outgrowth of that.
Yeah. That, and then, for me, stop reusing phrases. Do better line edits. For the love of God, I need to be better about catching those things.
Mm-hmm. I think I don't know if it's a lesson learned or just my, like, goal for myself is to keep practicing my voice acting, and I want to get more expressive with my voice when I'm acting. I have trouble with that. I don't want to, like, overact, so I tend to underact.
It is such a surprisingly, like, difficult line to find.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's my goal for myself.
Okay, all right.
Mine, honestly, is just to learn... when I was doing Madigo stuff, just understanding where desyncs happen. Like, I was kind of just learning from you and being like, oh, yeah, I think the reason why it doesn't sound quite right is because of here, and you make a tweak
and it would snap into place.
Yeah.
Refining your ear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we're towards the end, so plans for the future. All right, so for me. Of course, there's season 3, we all know that, but also the interseason arc, Goliad Gabby, I'm writing that right now, and it's going to be a bit of a departure from, like, sort of the tone of the harrowing, because the harrowing is a gritty action horror thing.
And even
Chevalier.
Was darker
pretty
in tone.
Pretty dark.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and also, by the way, we're sorry to all French-speaking people. We don't speak French, and we are trying our...
Honestly, all non-Americans. Like, we're doing our best with the pronunciations.
Yeah, we are, in fact... baby voice actors / amateurs, so we're trying our best. We're sorry we're butchering things,
because we're
learning. I know Chevalier is not how you actually
Chevalier.
Yeah, it's I feel like it's different than how I'm saying it. So, but anyway, Goliad Gabby, that's the working title right now. It might end up being the title, is pretty different from The Harrowing of Minerva Damson and Chevalier, because there are still sort of like danger elements involved, but it's much more of a almost like sort of Western action.
It's an action
coming
romp.
Of age.
Yeah.
I'm getting almost like Indiana Jones.
Yes,
fun
you
vibes.
Should. Yeah. You well, should think about it as like a teen Indiana Jones.
It's like
girl.
The first 15 minutes of The Last Crusade. Where he's still a teenager.
Did you
know all that stuff?
Did you know they actually had like a movie series called Young Indiana Jones?
They did.
I
used
yeah.
to watch it. I had VHSs of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
To give you an indication of our age.
Was it an animation or was it like...
No,
it was live.
It was live action.
Oh, wow.
It was live.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember which episodes I had or like which movies I had, but we had them. But so yeah.
Speaking of DILF energy, Harrison Ford.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What were we talking about? Cursed casting? Like,
oh, God.
Harrison Ford as Beast.
Wouldn't it be cursed? Because
no.
I think he'd do a great
yeah,
job.
I don't
no,
think
Harrison
he'd be
Ford
bad.
As he is now in his 70s as Beast Clavere.
Well, that wouldn't fit because
exactly.
he'd be like 70.
That's why it's cursed casting.
But we're talking about 80s.
But he still plays younger characters.
Okay,
know.
Like, prime beef Harrison Ford
yes.
as Beast Clavere would be fun.
Prime
yes.
beef.
Yeah.
Or,
I said
like,
what I said.
Like Blade Runner?
Yes.
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 Yeah.
Like Indiana Jones, like Han Solo.
Yeah. Blah.
Anyway, so...
Tangent?
Han Solo would be a little young, I think.
Thirsty tangent.
Okay. moving on from Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Goliad Gabby is going to basically be a teenage adventure coming-of-age story. And I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about that. And also I have the Delilah Docs, which, like I said, the Delilah Documents is the Patreon exclusive series that I'm doing that touches a little bit on like events that have already happened. Sometimes it talks about things that will be exclusive to that series and probably like won't pop up again in other parts of like the podcast. And some of it is going to foreshadow things that are going to happen later. And you don't have to obviously like listen to the Delilah Documents to know what's happening or what's going to happen, but it's like really fun and interesting information to have.
Yeah, it intersects with but does not directly inform the primary series.
Yeah, like the story about the Wild Hunt.
Yes, like
yes.
the story about the Wild.
It deals with a lot of other interesting aspects of mythology though, so if you like that part of the podcast, I would definitely check it out.
Or if you want to find out what else is going on in the European theater.
Yeah,
in this universe.
There is a lot going on. It's I would say it's almost kind of like the Order's sort of SCPs or something like archives, or maybe the Magnus archives, I
guess.
Just
like short incidents of like, oh, well, here's some crazy bullshit that happened.
And like piecing it together
yeah.
as you go. So I'm going to continue working on the Delilah Documents.
It's also a really, really nicely recorded series.
Oh,
honestly.
Yeah.
It's a good
one. It's recorded like it's, you should say,
like
yeah.
a wax recorded. Cylinder or
like
it's a
older recording.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
sounds like the sound is from.
Yeah, sort of like a wax cylinder or a phonograph. It's got that sort of like, you know,
crackly.
What era yeah. would you say? Like 50s?
No.
Older?
It's the 30s. And this is,
post-war.
I believe, 1933.
Yeah.
So when the Delilah Docs is happening. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I've had a lot of fun putting things together because the way that I think about this whole setting, it's like 1,000 moving wheels.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it gets a little...
So, yeah. Proposed fan title for Goliad Gabby is Rootin' Tootin' Cluckin' Shootin'.
No.
No, veto.
Hard veto. Also, you know, honestly, we're just working on a couple of other unrelated projects to
like
the harrowing.
The Harrison Ford topic leads into one of the
that's right.
podcasts.
That's true, actually. Well, Claire clearly has one thing on her mind.
No,
but
I'm just saying it was a good set. segue.
It is a good segue into...
Medium morsels. I've had this idea for a long time. I love talking about the types of media, like different kinds of media that have like shaped me as a creative. Like it's interesting to draw the line between like the things that I'm really interested in and do as a creative now and like draw a line back to the things that influenced me in that direction in the first place. So enter Medium Morsels, which is basically going to be a podcast where me and my friends sit down and will like watch or read or listen to or, you know, otherwise experience one of these formative works of art from my childhood up, honestly, till now. Like things that feed me creatively and talk about them. And also things that feed some of my friends creatively. Like there's going to be...
Yeah, we're all creatives of some stripe.
Yeah, we're all creatives.
We've all got sort of a... core memories associated yes. with pieces of media.
All of us can go back into our childhood or even a few years ago and be like, oh, this trope, this is where it all began, and this is what got me into that trope. And honestly, as we're talking about that, we're also going to be talking about like the media itself and other cool things that it did that maybe we didn't pick up on the first watch through or read through, or pick up when we were children.
Yeah. And maybe some not-so-cool things viewed from today's lens that Jessica will try to avoid with her own content.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean...
Lessons learned.
Honestly, you can learn as much by looking at what you don't want to do, or what something did wrong, as looking at what something did well.
But mostly it'll be a fun romp through older media.
Yes, mostly it will be that. And believe me, like my family had some really weird, eccentric tastes in media, particularly movies and books and television
shows.
Honestly,
everything. I may have mentioned, I can't remember if I mentioned this in a previous season wrap up or what, but when I first got introduced to Jessica and her family culture, I thought they were from a different dimension, because they kept coming up with these movies that were from a time period that I existed in, but I had no point of reference for where any of them
You'd
came
never
from.
Heard of them.
Like, what is this?
And yet, they're all, like, really good, though, well, aren't they?
They all have something to offer. I'll put it that way.
He won't go so far as to...
And then, like, there's some super popular stuff that they just never seen.
Yeah. Like I said, Hocus Pocus, I did not see that until, like, 2 years ago.
This is a travesty.
So anyway, so yeah, Medium Morsels, that's the sort of chaotic introduction to, like, the concept of this.
Well, and to be honest, if you're enjoying listening to us bullshit right now, Medium Morsels is going to take a very similar format.
Yes.
Maybe a slightly more structured.
So, yeah, Medium Morsels, but also we're working on another sort of audio drama concept that is Jamie's sort of baby.
I hesitate to call it an audio drama because it's going to be basically just a straight comedy. There is no set release date as of this moment.
No, no.
But the concept for working title Route 6.6 is the random happenings of a truck stop in outer space.
Yes. So if you like that kind of thing... We're in pre-production right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're writing music. We're putting together scripts. We're casting.
We don't have a logo.
Writing music.
We don't have a logo.
We need to do
and
yeah,
we
that.
Need to, yeah. Oh, which brings me to plans for the future merch, which we keep saying that we're going to do.
Oh, you need merch.
We need to actually make those posters.
We need a Matigo plushie.
Like today.
Yeah.
A Matigo plushie.
I mean, the Matigo plushie, like,
I'm on board
that's
for that.
Stretch goals. We have to wait till, like, we have a certain listenership and can expect people to actually buy it. Because right now,
support us on Patreon if you would like to have a spooky cat plushie.
Yes, exactly. Right now, we're still pretty small, but we're growing. And so I am really hoping that we can get a Matigo plushie at some point.
Yeah, I want to say our daily download numbers are almost twice what they were for season one.
Yeah, they are. Definitely, we are moving on up.
Yeah.
So, stickers and things like that, like maybe a t-shirt. We can
literally
do that.
Today we should like sit
we
down
we should
and
sit
do
down
we'll have a
today.
Working meeting after we
yes.
finish
yeah please oh my goodness
so those are I think those are the plans for the future as we have them as it is right now so I'm hoping to release the first episodes of Media Morsels in hopefully January. Fingers crossed. You know, the world.
New year, new project.
Yeah, new year, new project. The world's kind of crazy, and it's always throwing a curveball, so we will see.
And we're about to enter the holiday season, which...
Yes, the holiday season is... And then the post-holiday season where everybody's recovering.
The holiday hangover.
Yes. Hopefully in January we'll have that going on, and that will be a lot of fun. I'm super excited. I know that it's a good concept when I look at my list of media that I want to, like, go through.
We're excited.
And I can't pick... Like, it's hard for me to narrow down what to do in a month because I'm so excited to talk about all of them. So it's
movies that aren't really, like, mainstream that a lot of other people have maybe talked about.
There's a few of them that are, because how could, for instance, we overlook The Princess Bride, which was formative creatively for, like, pretty much all of us, I think,
on
some level.
In a big way.
But there's also going to be a lot of the really weird, obscure ones that really informed me as a kid, but literally almost nobody else has ever heard of.
And then we'll be bringing some of our own niche media to expose Jess to periodically.
I'm actually really excited about the Flip the Script episodes where like I get to see something new and talk about it and think about how it could inform me and going forward from here. So look forward to that. Thank you for joining us on our season 2 wrap up. We really appreciate you being here. We really appreciate you listening. And we hope to see you again, so to speak, for the next interseason arc and season 3. And if you want to continue supporting us, and if you want to sort of boost us, there's actually several ways that you can support us. Rating us on, like, things like Podchaser or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that by itself goes a really long way. And of course, sharing us, recommending us to your friends.
Plugging our Instagram.
Yeah, plugging our Instagram.
We also have a YouTube channel if anybody is interested in sharing that too. And it doesn't get enough love, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. And it does have the advantage of if you want to sort of read out the transcript.
Yeah, if you prefer closed captions, that's an option.
Yeah, it has closed captions. And we're working on getting the transcripts put on the website for, like, every episode, so that it's a bit more accessible too. And last but certainly not least, we have a Patreon. If you can't get enough of the harrowing of Minerva Damson, you're freaking me out.
No. I'm just saying, in the warm, welcoming vocals of the Matico,
support us on Patreon.
And if you support us on Patreon, you'll get access to not only ad-free episodes, but also the archives where we put additional interesting information, and the Delilah documents if you sign up for the Maiden tier. So if you want to show us some love, any of those things, all of those things really help. And once again, thank you so much. We're really glad you're here with us. And we look forward to bringing you more of the harrowing.
We hope you kept you entertained at least somewhat.
Yes.
We'll see you soon.
Safe travels, fair knights.
The Harrowing of Minerva Damson and its related stories are written, narrated, and produced by Jessica Linkhart, and features additional voice work by Miranda Lewis, Claire Miller, and Jamie Sykes. Art assets done in collaboration with Mitch Lewis. Thank you for listening. Our tale will continue next week.